ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. It's Thursday, the 27th of November. I'm Andy Park, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, deal done. Labor relies on the Greens' support to pass environmental law reforms. And he's our famous son, now America's favourite dancer. Robert Irwin wins on US TV's primetime ratings juggernaut.
The winners and new champions of Dancing with the Stars are Robert and Whitney!
Things are dark right now. People have many challenges in their lives, either personally or they look around the world and they just go, what is actually going on? Do you just think, well, why can't we have more Robert Irwins in the world?
First, dozens of people are dead after multiple high-rise apartment buildings caught fire in Hong Kong yesterday afternoon. Two directors and a consultant of a construction company working on the buildings have been arrested in connection to the fire. Authorities believe construction materials may be linked to the spreading of the fire, and one expert has likened the disaster to the 2017 Grenfell Tower blaze in London, which killed 72. Kimberly Price filed this report.
Walls of orange flames light up the night sky as thick black smoke billows through the evening. Located in the Tai Po district of Hong Kong, several high-rise apartment towers have been burning for more than 20 hours. Neighbours watched the inferno in horror.
Some of my friends live in this estate, so I just come and pray for them because I don't know how to help them.
And I live like 5 minutes away. It's really bad. It's really sad night for Hong Kong.
This resident was forced to leave behind his beloved dog.
I live in block one. I thought the fire from block three would not spread so fast. My dog was at home, so I thought of coming back and bringing the dog down from the apartment. It was just around 5 p.m. and the police would not let me up. I do not know what to do. I hope the government can help us to settle down after this.
Hong Kong Chief Executive John Lee has announced an inquiry into the blaze.
I take this incident with the utmost seriousness. I have instructed all government departments and units to make every effort on multiple fronts. Our top priority is to extinguish the fire and rescue the trapped residents.
Police have arrested two directors and an engineering consultant of a construction company which was working on the buildings at the time of the blaze. Authorities say they have found mesh, protective material and styrofoam on the outside of the building, which don't appear to be fireproof. Guan Yo is a professor of the School of Mechanical and Manufacturing Engineering at the University of New South Wales. He believes there needs to be a thorough review of Hong Kong's building regulations.
They should totally ban the bamboo scaffolding because the risk is high. I've been to Hong Kong before and those bamboos are very dry plant materials. Yeah, so they are very flammable. And those waterproofing materials that they put on top will be just polymers as well. So they are actually equally flammable as well.
Professor Yeo believes lessons for the construction sector should have been learnt from the Grenfell Tower disaster, which killed 72 people in London in 2017.
There are a lot of similarities between how the fire spread along the bamboo scaffolding with the cladding in Grenfell Tower, because that scaffolding just provided the avenue where the fire would just spread rather quickly, you know, upwards.
The cause of the Hong Kong fire is not yet known, but Professor Yeo explains there's many reasons why it could still be burning.
The buildings in Hong Kong is actually very close to each other. So it doesn't take much for embers coming from the original building to actually start impacting the neighbouring buildings.
More than 40 people have died in the fires, with dozens in a critical condition and nearly 300 people missing. The tragedy is hurting the Hong Kong community in Australia. Raymond Chung is a former senior Hong Kong firefighter now living in Melbourne. He's spoken to former colleagues currently fighting the blaze who have told him the conditions are extremely difficult.
They are tired, but they
they need to be, they still have to tackle the situation because they want the citizens to see back their families.
Kevin Yam is a Hong Kong democracy activist currently based in Melbourne.
There would be a pretty strong sense of community in these apartment complexes, and I think there would be a real strong sense of grief and worry right now about what's next.
Hong Kong democracy activist Kevin Yam, ending that report by Kimberly Price. Two National Guardsmen remain in a critical condition after what appears to be a targeted shooting near the White House. US President Donald Trump described the suspect, who was also shot and remains in custody, as an animal who will pay a very steep price. The shooting follows months of debate in the US about the military's force and presence in the Capitol, and it's prompted authorities to deploy 500 more National Guard troops to Washington, D.C. Here's Stephanie Smale.
Emergency crews rushed to the scene where two West Virginia National Guard members were gunned down in broad daylight, this witness describing the impact.
The National Guard member was covered in blood on his head, and there was countless personnel around him.
The guardsmen were on patrol near the White House as part of the Trump-ordered crime crackdown. They're now in hospital in a critical condition. Chief Jeffrey Carroll is from DC's Metropolitan Police Department.
The individual, the suspect, came around the corner. He immediately started firing a firearm at the two National Guard members. So at that time, there were other National Guard members that were in the area. They heard the gunfire. They actually were able to intervene and to kind of hold down the suspect after he had been shot on the ground until law enforcement got there within moments.
The suspect is in hospital too, and at this stage, authorities think he acted alone. They're still looking for a motive too.
At this point, we have no other suspects. We have reviewed video from the area. It appears, like I said, to be a lone gunman that raised the firearm and ambushed these members of the National Guard.
The shooting prompted the White House to go into lockdown, but President Donald Trump was in Florida at the time of the attack. He's described the shooter as an animal on social media and vowed they will pay a very steep price. The FBI director, Kash Patel, says local, state and federal authorities will work together to make sure anyone responsible will face the full force of the law.
And make no mistake, they will be brought to justice. Since this is an assault on a federal law enforcement officer, this will be treated at the federal level as an assault on a federal law enforcement officer. The FBI will lead out on that mission with our interagency partners to include the Department of Homeland Security, Secret Service, ATF, DEA. We will work together collaboratively because this is a matter of national security, because it's a matter of pride.
Locals say the attack has scared them.
I did feel safe until now. This is definitely a little more closer to home.
The National Guard's controversial presence in the nation's capital has fueled a court fight and a broader public policy debate about the Trump administration's use of the military to fight local crime. But the Trump administration says the president has now ordered another 500 National Guard members to deploy to the city in response to the shooting. The US Vice President J.D. Vance has spoken about the attack during a visit to troops in Kentucky.
I want everybody who's a person of faith to say a prayer for those two National Guardsmen that they're able to spend Thanksgiving with their families instead of losing their lives, because I understand they're still in pretty tough condition.
The emergency order that federalized the local police force and allowed National Guard troops to be deployed has expired, but the troops remain. Last week, a federal judge ordered an end to the deployment, but gave the Trump administration 21 days to remove the troops or appeal the decision.
Stephanie Smale. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has struck a deal with the Greens to pass major reforms to national environment laws. It's been more than four decades since the last reforms to increase federal government power over state governments in order to protect and preserve the environment. It comes as the Climate Change Authority released its projections that Australia is to fall just shy of its 2030 climate target and badly miss our 2035 target by up to 22% without significant changes. Kathleen O'Connor reports.
it's been years in the making.
Today I can announce our government's landmark environmental law reforms will pass the Parliament today.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and the Greens agreeing on a plan to strengthen Australia's environment protection laws.
We have consulted extensively with the business community, with environmental groups, and with community organisations. More than 5 years after Professor Graham Samuel handed down his independent review into the nation's 25-year-old environmental laws that were widely acknowledged as not being fit for purpose.
The changes include the nation's first Environment Protection Agency. Environment Minister Murray Watt described it as a landmark day for Australia's natural environment.
These reforms include a new streamlined assessment pathway, new and improved bilateral agreements with states and territories, reformed regional planning, clarifying definitions of unacceptable impacts and net gain for the environment.
Greens leader Larissa Waters says the negotiations were intense, and while they weren't able to get everything they wanted, her party supports some of the changes.
It is a step forward and it will enable a minister to actually protect the environment, which frankly is the job that their nameplate says they are meant to do.
Opposition leader Susan Lee called the deal dirty.
What is absolutely clear is that this is going to put energy prices up and provide further pressure on electricity bills for struggling households and families, for the simple reason that the Greens have got what they want.
The new plan has drawn mixed reaction from environmental groups. CEO of the Climate Council, Amanda McKenzie, says she's disappointed with the gaps in the legislation.
Well, there certainly is some improvements. We will see greater protections for Australian forests. We will see the fast tracking of responsible renewable energy projects. But there is a hole in the climate part of the law. We say that it's failed the climate test.
The head of the World Wildlife Fund, Dermot O'Gorman, welcomes the deal.
The previous ones were broke and these laws are better. They will make protection of both forest and wildlife better in this country.
Justine Bell-James is a professor at the University of Queensland specialising in environmental and climate change law.
The Samuel Review that this all stems from recommended that we move to a system that's outcomes-based. So we set rigorous outcomes that we want to achieve for the environment and the decision maker would be required to act consistently with them. Now, the language that we've seen in the drafting of the bills is that the minister must be satisfied that a decision is not inconsistent with the national environmental standards, which from a legal perspective is very different to being required to have something consistent with the standards.
The bill is expected to pass the Senate today.
Kathleen O'Connor. Advertising is increasingly unavoidable, and thanks to digital platforms, companies know more about you than ever before. As ads get more sophisticated, a new report reveals how alcohol and gambling companies are using data-driven marketing to target Australians at an industrial scale, with few safeguards in place to protect those at risk of harm. Bridget Fitzgerald has the story.
As a counsellor with Victoria's largest gambling support service, Gamblers Help Southern, Sachetta Chim says almost all her clients tell her they feel under constant pressure to place a bet.
Most of the ads that they see are gambling, especially on Facebook or on Instagram. They get a lot of ads or videos where people are gambling or it's like really encouraging to gamble. Even on YouTube, you can't skip the gambling ads. And then of course on television when you're watching the footy, it's just everywhere every time.
For problem gamblers, it makes recovery much more difficult.
I mean, for lack of a better word, they just describe it as very triggering.
A report published today by the Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education, or FARE, and Victoria's Health Promotion Foundation, Vic Health, details how alcohol and gambling companies track, profile and target Australians, including children, to push digital ads. Ayla Chorley is FAIR's Chief Executive Officer.
What we're seeing is this massive scale of an increase in programs that are using, you know, AI and these very sophisticated tools to collect this data so that they can really curate very targeted marketing for the individual.
Those at most risk of harm from products like alcohol and gambling are profiled as high-value customers rather than flagged as someone who may have an addiction. FAIR wants to see an opt-in model for ads relating to products that may be harmful or addictive. Professor Nicholas Carra is the director of the Centre for Digital Cultures and Societies at the University of Queensland.
The ad model becomes like kind of an enabler. You know, if you've got an addiction, it's like constantly putting that thing in front of you. Like, you know, with alcohol, the mobile phone kind of brings the bottle shop into the home. It becomes very difficult physically to get away from like the supply of the addictive commodity.
A spokesperson from Endeavour Group, Australia's largest alcohol retailer, says the company uses AI to understand customer preferences and that it continually monitors algorithms to prevent unintended marketing to people at risk. Alastair Coe is the executive director at industry group Alcohol Beverages Australia and says some of the report's findings, including that children are profiled by advertisers, is based on outdated data.
Targeting young people is expressly prohibited under multiple layers of regulation.
A spokesperson from Australia's largest wagering operator, Sportsbet, says all digital advertising excludes children and that it works with platforms to allow users to opt out of marketing. A parliamentary inquiry into online gambling recommended a total ban on online gambling ads in its final report in June 2023. But there's concern the federal government may not pursue a total ban, partly because under-16s will soon be barred from using social media. A spokesperson for the federal government says advertising is regulated to balance commercial interests with community safeguards and that the government has undertaken significant gambling harm reduction measures, including mandatory advertising warnings.
Bridget Fitzgerald there. The inquest into the murder of 21-year-old Lily James in Sydney has warned young people to reconsider sharing their location with their partners. Reporter Isabel Rowe joined me from the New South Wales Coroner's Court a little earlier, and a warning, her report contains some distressing details. Isabel, the coroner has gone through some of the facts of this brutal murder. Can you take us through them?
Lily James died on the 25th of October in 2023, as the coroner's court has found, by multiple blunt force traumas to her head and neck in a bathroom stall at St Andrew's Cathedral School in Sydney's CBD. She was killed by Paul Tyson with a hammer, and that was after their very short relationship ended just days earlier. The court heard that he physically stalked her on seven occasions before killing her and that he rehearsed this attack. And we know this because during the inquest, there was CCTV footage played of him buying a hammer, practicing using that hammer, and practicing entering the bathroom where he eventually killed her. The New South Wales coroner said that this was a premeditated killing. It wasn't a snap or a loss of control. And we know that Paul Tyson then went to Vaucluse. He called 000 and he either jumped or fell to his death at Diamond Bay Reserve. So his death was ruled to be suicide and his body was found a couple of days later.
Lily James' parents spoke outside the court. What did they have to say?
They gave a very short statement. It was the first time we've heard from her parents in this manner. They said that Lily, of course, is thought about and missed every single day. They were quite emotional. They also talked about the fact that they would like the media to report more on domestic violence and consider how they report on domestic violence. Here's a little bit of what they had to say.
Lily had a life cut way too short. Not a day goes by that we don't think of her. Or wonder what we could have done to prevent this from happening. Please, if it's been a while since you talked about violence or abuse against women, whether that's home, at work, or with friends or in the community, please start that conversation. Awareness, education, and speaking up matters. And also, one important thing, please don't report on positive comments. Saying people are good blokes, men, delightful, it's not acceptable. It's disheartening and it's cruel.
Lily James' father speaking outside the New South Wales Coroner's Court. And Isabel, what recommendations has Coroner Teresa O'Sullivan made over this case?
Well, she focused a lot in what she said today about the type of violence and murder this was. She called it intimate partner violence or gendered violence. She said that this was something that almost always happens by men killing women. She said that there was no single definition of coercive control, but this pattern of behaviour from Paul Tyson appeared to be coercive and controlling. And so her recommendations focused around that. She said that she thinks there needs to be further education to raise awareness about how to identify coercive control, particularly in the use of technology. And to that point as well, she also said that individuals and young people in particular should really consider how and why and to whom they share their location with through apps like Snapchat and Find My Friends, given that there was evidence that that is one of the ways that Paul Tyson tracked Lily James. She also recommended something around media reporting. She said that media should report on domestic violence, recognising that describing violence as out of character before the facts are known about the perpetrator could reinforce a stereotype, which she says is often incorrect, that this was a brain snap or something unusual. She said the evidence given in this inquest shows that these types of situations are almost always premeditated.
Isabel Rowe, and if you're in an abusive situation or know someone who is, you can call 1-800-RESPECT, that's 1-800-737-732, or call 000 in an emergency. You might be more at home with crocodiles, but Australian Robert Irwin has shown some snappy moves to take out TV's coveted Dancing with the Stars trophy in the United States overnight. In partnership with a professional dancer, the son of the late wildlife warrior Steve Irwin impressed the show's judges week after week with his moves. Now, the 21-year-old has the world at his dancing feet. Rachel Mealy has the story.
The winners and new champions of Dancing with the Stars are Robert and Whitney!
Robert Irwin has danced into the hearts of Americans.
Robert, what does this moment mean to you right now?
My sister said it best. Thank you for changing my life.
Oh my God.
The three-hour finale of the dancing competition was broadcast live on primetime television.
What do you think your dad would say to you in this moment?
One word, crikey.
Yeah.
Robert Irwin's win comes 10 years after his older sister Bindi won the title.
I'm just feeling such an overwhelming sense of gratitude.
Yeah.
I mean, this has changed my life, and I'm so happy I took this experience now, because now for the rest of my life I take what I've learned here and I take this friendship that is so incredibly special, and I'll have that forever.
Wenli Marr is the culture editor for The Nightly. She says Robert Irwin's win gives him a huge platform.
Oh, this opens a lot of doors for him. That episode of Dancing with the Stars in the US was their highest rated finale in almost a decade. So a lot of people watching, millions and millions of people watching, in addition to everyone who has seen little clips on social media.
Dancing the Jive with his partner Whitney Carson, it's Robert Irwin.
Week on Dancing with the Stars, the audience watched as Robert Irwin learnt a new dance. On dedication night, he performed an emotional tribute to his mum, Terry. Wenli Marr says Robert Irwin was able to showcase his personality and energy.
He's like this little bottle of sunshine that you can't quite put the cap on. He seems to have this irrepressible positivity and just optimistic outlook. And, you know, things are dark right now. People have many challenges in their lives, either personally or they look around the world and they just go, what is actually going on? And then you have this guy that comes along and says, things are great. I'm dedicated. I'm hardworking. And also, you know, he's a conservationist. He's pro LGBTQI rights. He is pro animal rights. And when you compare that to, say, the toxic manosphere and all these other social threats that are coming up on the other side, you just think, well, why can't we have more Robert Irwins in the world?
So what's next for Robert Irwin? Away from the dance floor, he's appeared in a children's animated film as a koala named Robert Furwin. He says he might also one day be interested in action films. Wenli Ma says he's everything a film studio wants right now.
What studios are looking for in terms of their top tier talent is someone who can, you know, hold the screen, have this enormous presence, but also be a marketing machine. If you look at some people like, you know, Dwayne Johnson, I mean, they are happy to go out there and absolutely sell any project they're on. And I think Robert Irwin has shown he's more than happy to do that. And big companies will happily leverage that kind of popularity.
Finally, Australian men getting the recognition for our rhythm we've long deserved. The Nightly's culture editor, Wenli Ma, ending that report by Rachel Mealy. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Andy Park.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. For many years, he was considered a pariah on the world stage. But Donald Trump has now brought the Saudi crown prince back into the fold. We know the US president wants to do business with the wealthy Gulf state, but what else is he hoping to get out of it? Today, New York Times contributor Noah Shachman on how Donald Trump wants America to be a lot more like Saudi Arabia. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.